now it's my pleasure to speak with actor Bradley Whitford of The West Wing. He, along with, I believe it's your wife.
Yes, Jane Kaczmarek.
Jane Kaczmarek of Malcolm in the Middle are receiving the Justice in Media and Arts Award tonight at the 14th Annual Awards Ceremony of Death Penalty Focus. Yeah, entertainers who have spoken out in recent times, I'm thinking of the recent presidential election,
right,
have caught a lot of hell in some cases. The notion that somehow you're an entertainer, you don't have the same rights as other citizens to speak out. The Republicans have had a lot of fun at the expense of some of those who came to John Kerry's support during the presidential election. What's your view on the role of an entertainer as a citizen?
My view is that in a democracy, anybody who tells anybody else to shut up should shut up.
I agree with that, by the way.
And I certainly understand the sort of heart-sinking feeling when a celebrity starts to blab in a way that seems to be misinformed or self-congratulatory. I understand that reaction, but most of the things that I speak out about, I'm not speaking out as an actor or as a member of a television show. I'm speaking out as a father in a very difficult time. The other irony is that generally the only people telling celebrities to shut up are celebrities. It's Bill O'Reilly, who's an entertainment reporter, telling actors to shut up. And what do we, should George Bush shut up?
Well,
the guy's an oil executive.
An oil executive. And I must say, I don't remember anybody telling Charlton Heston to shut up or Tom Selleck or some folks who might have a different point of view.
No, it's always. And I also think that they're, I actually take it as a compliment that they make such a sort of ridiculous do. It's part of their little end zone dance.
So in your case, what brought you to this particular issue of the death penalty?
Was
it the work on the show? Was it experiences in life or just thinking?
I was raised as in a Quaker family.
Oh.
And the death penalty was always an issue in the Quaker meeting, prison issues were always an issue. I feel strongly that the most effective use of a celebrity voice is to people who have no voice.
Mm-hmm.
The hypocrisy of the dissonance of living in a country where supposedly the Christian right is on the rise, and I'm not sure, but I think that Jesus Christ died in a bogus death penalty rap.
That's right. That's right. Well, Mike Farrell pointed out a few minutes ago, actually, that perhaps one of the, from the point of view of those of us who didn't think much of government mucking around in the Terry Schiavo case, there may be some good that has come out of it in the sense that some of the more conservative voices in this country who championed her cause and preached about the sanctity of life are now admitting that perhaps they've got to take another look at the death penalty.
Yeah, I think they are, and I think that in a similar way, the death of the Pope has brought to a lot of the Christian right the hypocrisy into focus.
Well, it's a good point. And in fact, in a recent Zogby poll that just showed that 50% of Americans in general oppose the death penalty, it was a higher percentage that oppose it if they were Catholic, suggesting that the role of the Church and the Pope in that regard has had an impact.
Right.
And perhaps I'm going to talk to the bishop a little later and find out what their church is doing about
it. Well, I'll tell you, I think one of the difficulties with an issue like this is it's a bit of a political football and has been used as a simplistic way of dealing of getting your anti-crime bona fides out to the public instead of dealing with
more tough on crime
complex reasons. And you talk to these political advisors that we get to talk to on the show, and whether it's gay marriage or the death penalty, these strategists are always saying to politicians, You have to figure out what hill you want to die on. No pun intended, but they make a choice to avoid issues like gay marriage, to avoid standing up morally on issues like the death penalty. And I'm not excusing it, but I think the reason it's such a tough issue is that they would rather die on what they perceive as a more pragmatic hill, the healthcare hill.
The healthcare issue or whatever. Yes, right. Well, perhaps they're to be forgiven or not, I don't know. But anyway, I want to congratulate you, and I'm sorry I didn't, I'll say the same to your wife, Jane, when I get a chance to talk to you.
Oh, okay.
You're to be congratulated for your work, for your outspokenness on this issue.
And, thank you.
And I'm a fan of the show as well.
Well,
so it's been nice meeting you.
Thank you very much for putting my kids through college.
Thank you. Okay. That's right. Rightly so. And folks, you're listening to the Lawyers Guild Show here on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara County. Tonight we're talking with some of the honorees at the 14th Annual Awards, a dinner of death penalty focus, the largest membership-based anti-capitalist capital punishment organization in the country. And in the background, chortling at my misstep, was Bradley Whitford of West Wing, one of tonight's honorees.
Thank you.
All right, this is KPFK, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara County. You're listening to the Lawyers Guild Show. I'm Jim Lafferty, and tonight we're recording live in the lobby of the Fairmont Miramar Hotel in Santa Monica at the 14th Annual Awards Dinner of Death Penalty Focus, which is the largest membership-based anti-death penalty group in the country. And I'm talking with a number of the honorees and others that have a key interest in this issue. And now I'm very pleased to be talking to Donald Heller. Donald Heller, in 1978, before I was here in California, wrote what was called the Briggs Initiative, which put on the ballot and then became the California death penalty law. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. But now I understand, Mr. Heller, that although you were the author of this initiative and a backer of this initiative, of course, initially, you've come to change your mind, as have indeed many Americans over the last 30 years. Tell me what brought you to this new place.
Well, I think it was a coalescence of factors. One, a wife who was very anti-capital punishment from the first day we met. And but in private practice, I had the opportunity of seeing the other side, realizing that people charged with death penalty cases uniformly did not receive the best assistance of counsel, that the system really was unfairly stacked against the poor, the blacks, the Latinos, that there were too many open-ended issues, and the thing that convinced me that it just wasn't working. The way it was drafted, it was intended to be fair and just. In reality, it has nothing to do with the way it was drafted. It's the way it's carried out.
Yeah.
And you have the vagaries of the selection of juries, of judges, of prosecutors. We stack people on death row. We spend millions of dollars every year, over $100 million. And we execute one person every 2 years. If we just put aside the moral issues, from a practical perspective, it's unworkable. Chief Justice George, just in the last several months, stated that the leading cause of death on death row is old age. The system is non-functional.
Yeah.
It's broken. It can't be repaired. It should be simply abolished.
Yeah. So you agree with former Supreme Court Justice Harry Blackmun in that regard, that tinkering with the system, trying to make it as fair as some have tried to make it, is an impossible task.
It is.
Given, as you say, all the
vagaries
of the vagaries of the system.
I mean, it's unbelievable. And it truly discriminates against the poor.
Mm-hmm.
If you have money to hire good lawyers, your chances of escaping death increase geometrically.
Yes.
Money talks. That should not be a factor in a fair punishment.
Mm-hmm. So you must be encouraged then by what's been going on in this country of late. Not only do the public opinion polls show support for the death penalty way down to 50% or lower, depending on how you ask the question, but you have New York State refusing to reintroduce the death penalty now. You've got New Mexico looking at it, Illinois, of course. Here in California, a commission has now been appointed by the state Senate you must be pleased with those developments and hopeful.
I'm pleased. And what it really reminds me of my first year philosophy course of Plato's Allegory of the Cave, what is true light? And I think in the last analysis, society is far better not being a mass murderer.
Yes, yes. So not only from a practical point of view that you talk about how all that money could be spent on
education,
crime prevention, making us safe as opposed to locking people away at that expense in an imperfect system. In addition to that, you've also come to feel that morally, it's not what any civilized society should be doing.
No, I think we should be with the civilized countries of the world and not be with the states that kill.
Indeed, indeed. Well, I want to thank you.
You're welcome.
And as you say, it's always good when someone who had a different position comes around to another's point of view. That's my point of view, and so I'm prejudiced, but I thank you very much. And
you're welcome.
I'm glad you're here today.
Thank you.
We've just been talking with Donald Heller, who was the initiator of the Briggs Initiative, which in 1978 was on the California ballot. It passed, and that's what brought the death penalty to California at that time. He is now a convert to the cause of anti-capital punishment. He's here at the Death Penalty Focus 14th Annual Dinner, honoring a lot of great folks. And it's now my pleasure to talk with one of tonight's honorees, who is certainly no stranger to this issue, and I suspect to our audience. I'm talking about Sister Helen Prejean. And she is the author of Dead Man Walking, The Death of Innocence,
that's right.
And maybe other books I'm forgetting.
Two, that's enough. And the last one took me 5 years.
Well, that's a long time. And we were just talking with a Japanese death penalty lawyer who said you're on your way to Japan soon to help with their effort. Well, you've got to be happy today. I mean, all the years you've spent this work, recent public opinion polls, its support is down to 50%, lower depending on how you ask the question. I'm curious, number one, what you think contributed to that, why you think that's happened. And another thing that interests me, that same poll showed that among Catholics in this country, as opposed to any other religious group, support from the death penalty was the lowest. So I'm wondering why you think that's true, too, and what those of us who are opposed to the death penalty might learn from that.
Yeah. Well, you know, life is movement. Mm-hmm. It's like a wave. It's like a current on a river. And the death penalty is that. Remember that this country put it back in 1976. Ironically, the year that Canada abolished it, and they said goodbye to the death penalty. We said hello to the death penalty, and had been in all the quagmires and killed almost 1,000 human beings. Mm-hmm. And I think there have been a number of things. Remember that Thurgood Marshall, the first African-American ever on the Supreme Court, said, the American opinion about the death penalty is an unreflected opinion. Give the American people a chance to reflect and give them information about the death penalty and they'll reject it. Now, we've been at it almost 29 years, almost 30 years. Mm-hmm. And I think what's happened is, in the early 90s, DNA, the truth-telling machine, as they call it, opened the door, saying, look, no matter what all these appeals courts are doing or the elaborate machinery you got in place, hey,
mistakes.
You're getting the wrong people.
Mistakes, yeah.
You're getting the wrong people. They could show it scientifically.
Yeah.
That opened the door. And so then people began to say, well, what have the appeals courts been doing? We thought they were supposed to scrutinize all these cases. So now we're becoming very clear about the structure of the death penalty. It's what I show in my new book, The Death of Innocence. 80% of the practitioners of the death penalty are in the 10 to 12 southern states that practice slavery the longest. The structural reason is poor people have poor defense, and Louisiana is not about to pass a bill to put adequate money into defending capital defendants. They're not about to do
that. Who are mainly poor defendants.
Who are always poor.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, and I show this in the book Death of Innocence, that tells the story of accompanying two people to death. It's going to break the American public's heart because they're going to go through the trial of the person. They're going to find they were found guilty, sentenced to death, then executed. Dobie Williams in Louisiana, African-American man with an IQ of 65. Joseph O'Dell in Virginia, who represented himself. He had a jailhouse snitch, the whole thing. Virginia kills him, then destroys the DNA evidence so it can't be tested. And they're going to go through those cases. By the time See, I've learned that books are important because they bring people to a quiet place. You don't have to argue. You don't have to defend your position. Use your imagination. Your heart gets involved. And you follow the story, and it can change you. Mm-hmm. And so the two stories, and then they get into what's the structure. And the structure is, because they're poor, because you don't have good defense, you know what that means at trial? Juries do their best.
Yeah.
They're asked to play God. The truth doesn't come out at trial if you don't have a true adversarial system of justice.
That's right.
So prosecution, it's like a slam dunk.
Sure.
They hide evidence.
Yeah.
We have an amazing statistic in Louisiana. The last 27 finalized cases of the death penalty. Now listen to this, it's truly amazing. Over 90% of the death cases were proved to be wrongful convictions. They shouldn't have been sentenced
over
to death.
Over 90%?
Over 90%.
Oh my God.
Out of 27 of them, yeah. 24.
Yes.
Six were exonerated, one died on death row, and then the other five, they were released from death row because under mental retardation, Atkins decision, or juvenile. Yeah. And then the courts, in 12 cases, overturned it because they found that the prosecution had withheld exculpatory evidence or distorted the facts. That's over 90%. That's the last 27 finalized cases in Louisiana. Do we have a problem with the death penalty? The American people are beginning to see we do. And they're beginning to see that it's systemic.
Now,
and I think that's why the polls are going down.
Okay, now, why do you think Catholics are even more opposed to the death penalty than other religious groups in this country, according to this poll? Is that the work of John Paul II? Has the Catholic Church just been more outspoken about it than some of the other churches? What do you think accounts for it?
Yeah, and I'm saying this without smiling.
No,
now.
No.
People can't see my lips on the radio, but
right.
I want to say I'm saying this without smiling. It's a 1,600-year-old journey for the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
The traditional teaching of the Catholic Church, like most Christian churches, which arose out of the whole thing of having to protect society against dangerous people when they didn't have prisons. Traditional teaching was society had the right, government had the right to execute violent people to protect society. And they only did for grave or grievous crimes. Now, of course, how they define grave or grievous crimes, yes. In Nigeria, that's adultery, but
that's, right.
That's another problem.
That's right.
So what you have here is dialogue that has been going on in the Catholic Church for over 20 years. Bishops had been writing because they were in their countries, bishops in the Philippines, bishops in Canada, bishops in different countries. I was in there in that dialogue too. Joseph Adele, the second story in Death of Innocence, the people of Italy picked up his case like you wouldn't believe. 5 million people stayed awake in the night of Joseph Adele's execution in July of 1997.
Oh my goodness.
The Pope got involved. I got to have a direct dialogue
with
the Pope. I'd been one day
of
a direct dialogue with the Pope about the death penalty for 14 years.
Yes.
I had accompanied already three people execution. And in it, I raised questions to the Holy Father. Now, I wasn't alone, but I did get to put all those experiences in his lap.
Yes.
And he's a very pastoral man.
Yes.
1 week after my letter, where I raised questions, I said, does the Catholic Church only stand for the dignity of the innocent? When somebody's going to execution, they're saying, sister, pray that God holds up my legs. Where is the dignity in someone who's shackled hand and feet, has been rendered defenseless, and then is brought to their death? Where's the dignity in this death?
Right.
And see, for the Pope and for the Catholic Church, if you've rendered somebody defenseless, if you've already defended society, which the Pope had said in his own encyclical, The Gospel of Life, which came out in 95, so you defended society, how do you justify taking a defenseless person and killing them after keeping them in a cell as small as a small bathroom for 25 years?
Mm-hmm.
That sounds a lot like torture, doesn't it?
It sure does.
And the Pope responded, and the friends I have in the Vatican just said he read every word of your letter.
Wonderful.
1 week after he got the letter, he changed the catechism. 1600 years, the church had used the criteria for grave or grievous crimes the state could execute. They cut that out as a criteria.
Wow, yeah.
Which means,
I did not know that. Yeah.
Which means no matter how grave the crime, if you kill a building full of people, if you kill a room full of people, if it's Osama bin Laden,
Oklahoma City, whatever.
Yeah. No matter how grave or grievous the crime, societies have a way to protect themselves, and so have to.
Are you concerned?
It's huge. It's a huge change.
Are you confident that any new pope, whoever he may be, will continue in that same vein?
Well, it's going to be hard to change it because the direction now, see, it's all about currents in a river.
That's right.
When a wave begins and a current for life begins, and now the Catholic bishops have gotten on board.
Indeed they have.
March 21st, and that was another thing I said in the letter. That I said, Your Holiness, I said, the bishops issue statements, but the people in the pews are saying, fry them. We got to have an energetic educational campaign to get to people in the pews. Mm. They're not going to believe this just because the Pope says you got to bring people through the journey of the heart that's involved in the death penalty.
One last question, if I may, because I'm feeling guilty keeping you away from dinner.
We all feel guilty.
That's in your honor, but
no,
this
I don't
is wonderful.
Feel guilty.
One of the things I've heard you say, actually, a number of times, or read that you've said a number of times, or both, and it always resonates strongly with me, and that is the notion that anyone, no matter what they've done, be they murderer or anything else, is more than the worst thing they've done.
Yeah.
And that always struck me as
you
such
know,
a wonderful
what?
Sentiment for life in general. But I'm wondering, the people who have lost someone to murder and who talk about closure, isn't that something that they need to understand if they're going to ever really have closure? Because we know the death penalty doesn't bring it to them.
Yeah, look, I'm going to just tell you. Catholic Charities in Oklahoma City, I visited there about three years after the bombing.
Yes.
The whole city was affected. Everybody knew somebody. And it was a whole thing for victims' families. They were helping each other. I was only the catalyst. I'm not the one who can heal them. I haven't had a loved one killed. And I always remember that there was a man sitting over to the right who hadn't said anything all afternoon. At the end, we're about to end, he said, may I say something? He stood up. He said, look, we lost our daughter in the Oklahoma City bomb. There's not a night I'll put my head on my pillow and know how my daughter died and I, as her father, could not protect her. Can we just not use that word closure anymore? He said, you close on a house, you close a chapter of a book, you don't close on life. Mm. And I'll always remember how my daughter died. Now, with God's grace, we learn to cope. We're loving our children. Mm-hmm. We're moving on. Mm-hmm. But closure.
He may be the same gentleman whose name I'm embarrassed to say I've forgotten, who I was quite moved by. We had him on the show not long after the Oklahoma City bombing.
Bud Welch?
Yes, of course. It was Bud Welch, the same gentleman you're talking about.
Yeah. Because I end my book with him. Two Cries of the Heart.
Yes.
Bud Welch is one.
That's right. Because he's the one who said, of course, he had been in favor. When his daughter died in that, he said, I would have killed him with my bare hands.
Yeah.
And then I thought about my daughter and the kind of person she was and what she stood for and what her life meant and how if I went down that road, I was no damn better.
I was going to dishonor her.
I was going to dishonor my own daughter. I had to do some thinking.
Yeah.
And now he's someone, as you know, who goes all around the country.
Oh, yeah. I've been with him in Moscow.
Sure you,
we
and,
were
oh,
together in
right?
Russia.
Yeah. Oh,
oh, I know Bud really well.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Let me just end by saying something about law.
Please.
See, my daddy was a lawyer.
Uh-huh.
And I automatically thought that if something is lawful, it must be right, it must be holy. I never thought that sometimes you might have law that is against human rights or not right. That's been a whole journey for me to understand that. But one of the things I've discovered is that when a government wants to do something, like when you look at the history of the Nuremberg laws in Germany in the early 30s, before they could haul off Jews to concentration camps, first, they began to strip people of their civil rights. They can't raise the flag.
Mm-hmm.
They can't marry an Aryan. They can't hold a professional job. You begin to strip people.
That's right.
So then when you kill them, you already have the image they're less than human,
anyway,
and you legalize it.
That's right.
And you know, Thomas Merton, a Trappist monk, said, when the world ends, it will be legal. And in this book, The Death of Innocence, now I'm just a citizen. Mm-hmm. I'm not a lawyer. Mm-hmm. But I take the Rehnquist Court over the last 20 years and show how they took each of the constitutional protections and made them ineffective. Mm. They so tightened the screws on each one, people couldn't access the constitutional protections. Mm. They couldn't access effectiveness of counsel, couldn't access due process under law, couldn't access a fair and impartial jury of your peers. Mm-hmm. They just shut it all down.
That's right.
Did it all legally. And so just because it's in law does not necessarily mean that it's holy and right.
You know that.
And we only know that through experience and by then constitutional discourse, talking about our Constitution with people, and that's what I do in this book. I take on the courts in the second part of Death of Innocence.
So it's more than just about the death penalty itself in that regard.
It's the whole legal
structure.
I've not
read it yet. I apologize, I've not read it yet.
And here's a little clincher, because I'll have to leave you after
that's
this.
Right, yeah.
As great as it is to talk to you, which is better than food, is, you know what they have to write on a death certificate?
No, I don't actually.
When they execute someone, they got to write the truth.
The cause of death?
Cause of death. Guess what they have to write? Failure to breathe?
Oh.
Heart attack? What do you write? They have to write it. They have to say homicide.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Often they put a word in front of it. Legal.
Legal homicide.
Legal homicide. They got to say it. Got to tell the truth.
It's got to tell the truth. Sister, it's so nice to meet you finally. And I congratulate you for your honor tonight. And go and enjoy, please.
Yes, I shall.
We've just been talking with Sister Helen Prejean. Her latest book is The Death of Innocence. Of course, initially she was well known for her work on Dead Man Walking, the wonderful movie that was made about that. And that's just going to be about all the time we have tonight, I'm afraid, for the Lawyers Guild show. And I want to thank, before I go off the air, David Adelson. David does not normally do this. In fact, he's a national board member of Pacifica. But he's also with Sound Posse, L.A. Sound Posse. And that means, among other things, that tonight's show will be made available to alternative radio stations all over the country. So David took off his board of directors suit, put on his gym shoes and his khakis and his t-shirt, and is our engineer tonight. And I thank you so much for that, David. I want to thank all of you for listening tonight as well. Until next week, same time, same place on the Lawyers Guild Show, this is Jim Lafferty thanking you for listening, wishing you good health, and as always, urging you to stay active and stand up for your rights.
My share equal rights.